Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody? Friday afternoon, morning for some of us, of course, but Friday afternoon, and it's wild card weekend. A huge, huge matchup coming up, three times the charm, I guess. I'm Anthony Cosenza, joined by John Sharon. And John, we've got an awesome guest we're going to bring in just a second, another great one from the folks at the Believe Podcast Network.
Yeah, I mean, you said third time's a charm. This is the Charm City, I believe we're talking about in Baltimore. Charm City versus Queen City action. But yeah, we got a great guest lined up for you, host of Believe in Ravens podcast. He played for the Ravens for a handful of years, was even part of their playoff run in 2008 when they went to the conference championship. We got former NFL tight end Daniel Wilcox joining us. Daniel, how's it going, man?
Everything's great. John, Anthony, thank you guys for having me on, man. Truly appreciate it.
Absolutely. You are decked out in the Ravens gear, and I love it. Talking about this big game here, I guess where I want to start because your last year with the Baltimore Ravens coincided with John Harbaugh's first year, right, as head coach. Right. With that, right. The Harbaughs in the region of Ohio, at least between Jim coaching the University of Michigan and John being a division rival, the Harbaughs kind of have this, you know, there's a lot of respect for them as head coaches, but there's also that rivalry thing going on there. Talk about what it was like playing for a guy like John Harbaugh, because he is, I think, one of, if not the longest tenured head coaches in the NFL behind Bill Belichick, right? So talk about playing for a guy like that, because he's had so much success, won Super Bowls, and you were a part of a great team of his.
Well, John came in like towards the end of my career. So I was on year nine when John came in. I was coming off a huge injury. I had hurt my foot the year prior, and I pretty much rehabbed all season long. So I went through that. I think I got hurt against Cleveland, like week three of 2007 season. Rehabbed the entire season, came back and played against the Patriots that year. Almost had a chance to beat the Patriots and lost. And then that summer, they decided they was going to let Brian Billick go. And we didn't know who they was going to sign. Then when they signed John Harbaugh, and everybody was freaking out, like, what? They signed a special teams coordinator? Like, who does that? You know, but, you know, Steve Bisciotti is, like, the owner of the Baltimore Ravens. Is probably one of the best owners I've ever been around, you know. And it was just such a pleasure being a part of the Baltimore Ravens franchise due to the owner. I feel like everything starts at the top. And because he's such a special guy, you know, it kind of trickles down to everyone underneath him. When he hired John Harbaugh had my respect instantly because I felt I had so much respect for Steve Bisciotti. You know, so I remember when he first came in and he was a special teams guy. I made my way in the league through special teams pretty much all the way through all nine seasons. I was special teams captain in Baltimore for a couple of years, led the team in tackles until they brought in Gary Stills from Kansas City. And then he kind of stole my reign. I was number two. He was number one. And Harbaugh, when he came in, I remember sitting down in his office having a conversation with him. And he was asking me, like, real questions. And I had a lot of respect for him because he did this. And this is one, I don't think I ever told this story to anybody, but I remember the first meeting I had with Harbaugh one-on-one, and he was actually asking me, what did I think about our coaches or whatever, you know? And I wanted to stand on the table for my coach at the time. And I think my coach is now in Denver. I think he's coaching in Denver with the Broncos, but his name is Wade Harmon. And Wade was such a special coach for me. You know, I had bounced around the league my first three or four years. And when I got to Baltimore, I remember Wade from working me out at Appalachian State. He literally came to App State, worked me out, trained me, and then we sat down and talked after he trained me. He said, "You're the best athlete I worked out this year." Like, athlete. Hmm. Not best tight end, not best receiver, not best running back, but the best athlete that I've worked out this year. And that stood out to me. So I was going to Baltimore as a rookie to the NFL, and then when they drafted Todd Heap first round, they already had Shannon Sharp, already had Ben Coates. Now they got Todd Heap. That put me in a really tough spot. So I ended up going to New York as an undrafted free agent, you know, but sitting down talking to John, I told him, like, Wade Harmon is the best coach I've ever had. You know, like, he pretty much fired the entire coaching staff, but he kept Wade Harmon. And I still have respect for John Harbaugh to this day because he decided to keep Wade Harmon, because I felt like Wade was an integral part of why Todd Heap was as special as he was and why Daniel Wilcox became and actually arrived, you know, in the NFL for the first time in his four at the time was my 4-year playing career. But by the time Harbaugh came in, I was on year 9. And I just felt like keeping Wade was a very integral part of our success in that tight end room. And, you know, after I left, they brought in Dixon and they brought in Dennis Pitta and they brought in all those guys. And they also flourished underneath Wade. You know, he was the coach the entire time. And then he left and went to the Falcons, came down here to Atlanta. You know, I had no idea why they released him at that point. But I know Cam Cameron ended up getting fired and stuff like that, that Harbaugh brought in with him. But Harbaugh came in and he came in like a fireball. He came in like, you know, just really, you know, mean at times and really nice at times. It was really like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde type stuff. You didn't really know what you was going to get from him. You know, so when he first came in, he was such a nice guy. I was like, man, he's such a dope guy. I think you're going to be really, really good underneath him. But he had this, for some reason, he had this inclination that we were soft. And I think this is what it was. You know, Brian Billick was a former player. You know, he played in this league. And they used to call our training camps Camp Billick because he would give us days off. You know, so the older veteran guys, he wouldn't put them through the ringer and treated them like they was rookies. He would let those guys sit out every other day. You know, so they called us Camp Billick. So when Harbaugh came in, he had this real like Barrett Bryant type thing where we was in full pads every day. We practiced three times a day and nobody got days off, not even the older guys. You know, it was a really stressful, you know, strenuous things on all of our bodies. And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen so many guys in the training room, you know, just getting treatment and, you know, getting their feet taped and their hands and wrists and getting treatment on everything, ankles, hot tub, cold tub. We was dying. So he came in with this really Bear Bryant type, you know, I'm going to get them tough. I'm going to toughen them up. And then we're going to be stronger in December than we were in the beginning of the season. And it's almost unheard of, you know, but I respected it. You know, I really did. I respected it. I understood what he was trying to get done. And I felt like our defense, at the time, our defense was like number one, number two in the whole league. You know, when he came in, they had been like that for the whole 5 years I was in Baltimore. So I didn't feel like the defense had an issue. If anything, you need to toughen up us, the offensive guys. You know, the defense, you should have gave them the whole training camp off and just worked on our asses because we ones, I feel like, couldn't get it together, you know. So the 1 year when Steve McNair came in 2000, and I think it was 2006, that was like our best year. It was like one of our best seasons. I mean, we literally went almost – I mean, we had such a great year that year. I thought we was going to win the Super Bowl. And then Steve got kind of tweaked. He kind of got hurt and banged up towards the end of the year. And we lost that first round, that second round playoff game to the Colts with Peyton Manning. Mm-hmm. And that was tough. But when Billy got fired, Harbaugh came in. He set the tone really, really stern at first. And, you know, as the season went on, you know, he kind of lightened up a little bit. And we ended up going to the AFC Championship game that year, 08, 09, and lost to the Steelers. And it was a – it was a Ravens Steeler classic. That's all I can tell you. It was a freaking classic. Mm-hmm. You know, we came in and fought hard. I think Willis McGahee, he got knocked out that game. And it was just it was a crazy, crazy game. I think Ryan Clark hit him. Ryan's all over the Pivot podcast now. And he came downhill and hit Willis in the flat and caught him like with his head turned. As soon as he turned around, hit him right in his face, and Willis was knocked unconscious. I think Ryan Clark knocked himself out the game as well.
Oof.
It's crazy.
I mean, that was such a great answer because it also answered the question that I was going to ask you just about the legacy of tight ends in this organization. Mm-hmm. It's only 25 years old, but there's already so many great names.
So many.
So, like, what do you think has kind of instilled that continuing through Mark Andrews, who's now third, I believe, in franchise history in receiving yards? Like, what has that, like, is it like the culture or just like the continuation of the valuation of this position?
You know, I like to just say the Ravens just got such a great front office and player personnel department with George Kokainis and Joe Ortiz. Them guys are like masterminds when it comes to evaluating talent and finding guys, right? I would like to say that I was one of those great tight ends they found and brought in and just say we was going to be amazing and we was going to have such a great tight end lineage here. But I really honestly got to give the props to the defense, man. I think iron sharpens iron, and we line up against some of the best defensive players in the country every single day at practice. You can't help but to get better, you know, and I feel like we all got pushed to our limits on a day-to-day basis. You know, me going against Terrell Suggs and Jarrett Johnson every single day on the edge, I never faced anybody as dominant as them. The only person that came close or that was as dominant as them is James Harrison, and he was an ex-Raven himself, you know, that went to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I really do believe that they do a great job of evaluating talent and understanding that who can catch, who can't catch, who can run routes, who can't run routes, who got a natural ability to get open and create separation. And then they also go get great defensive guys so that when we have to go out there every day at practice, you know, we're 100 miles per hour every single rep. Even the walkthroughs are full speed in Baltimore. There's never a break. So, I mean, it's been like that from day one. But I was blessed to be able to go to Tampa Bay and go to the New York Jets and to go to NFL Europe before I came to Baltimore, because I don't know if I would have been prepared or ready for the tempo and the speed and the way we practiced in that place, you know, if I hadn't did that. You know, Tampa definitely prepared me being down there with Derrick Brooks, Simeon Rice, Warren Sapp, you know, Rondae Barber, you know, John Lynch. You know, it was so many freaking phenomenal names on that defense, you know. And the Jets was a nice stepping stone, too. You know, Aaron Glenn, who's a coach now in Detroit Lions, you know, Mo Lewis, Sam Coward, Marvin Jones, who's now coaching, I think, at Florida State, if I remember correctly. It's so many phenomenal players. John Abraham, Sean Ellis was on that first defense. I've been on great defenses, you know, my entire career, but it just goes to show you like how stacked each team really is in this league. Like this league is such a phenomenal league. There's so much talent, you know, throughout every single program and every single team. Like it's unbelievable.
Talking with Daniel Wilcox, former Baltimore Ravens tight end, a Super Bowl champion with those Tampa Bay Buccaneers that he just mentioned, and current host of the Believe in Ravens podcast. We'll hear more about that in just a little bit. Enjoying our chat with him. We're kind of catching, we're going blast to the past, and then we're catching up to where we are this weekend here. And I want to talk a little bit about not only your time with the Baltimore, because look, you've talked about, you know, the toughness that Harbaugh instilled on all sides, every phase of the Baltimore Ravens. You talked about James Harrison being a guy who is a Raven and then a Steeler. And then, you know, in your time with the Baltimore Ravens, the Bengals started kind of turning things around, and they accumulated a lot of talent. And, oh, by the way, their coach was from the Baltimore Ravens and Marvin Lewis. Yeah. But here's the thing. They won games. They would fare pretty well against you guys. You guys kind of had back and forth against the Ravens.
True.
The Bengals did not do well against the Steelers in this time. And then, of course, as we all know, they did not do well in primetime and or playoff games under Marvin Lewis. However, I kind of want to get your take and your mindset as a player during that time in the AFC North when the Bengals were kind of ascending. But was there also kind of a, I don't know, like, hey, if we get in their heads, they'll fold, or you know what I mean? Like, I'm kind of curious about what you and your teammates' mindset might have been about the Bengals at that time, because they were on the rise, but they kept kind of tripping over their own feet in big games.
I think the biggest knock on the Bengals was pretty much the same knock that we had. You know, like, Carson Palmer was a great quarterback, you know, but he wasn't like an elite quarterback. He was really, really good, though. He made some throws that you were like, holy crap. Like, he used to throw this comeback route to Chad Johnson at all the freaking time. And he would literally throw this ball, and Chad still had 5 yards left to run. You know, he's still running head up the field, driving the DB down the field. He sticks his foot in the ground. He turns around, the ball is coming down like a go ball, almost like a go ball to the sidelines. And Chad turns around, boom, catches it, drop 2 feet right there on the sideline, and just freezes his body like a pole and falls out of bounds, man. Then they had TJ Husmanzadeh. Their offense was super, super explosive. They always had big playmaking abilities. I just felt like they never had enough, like a scary defensive component. You know, in Cincy, you know, we was,
which is weird with Marvin, right? That's weird.
Yeah. It's really weird because Marvin, exactly. Extremely weird, man. Like, I felt like we was never afraid to play them, but I felt like people was afraid to play us. You know, they was afraid to play Pittsburgh, and AFC North at the time was probably one of the strongest probably hands down the strongest conference in the entire NFL at that time.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
It was somebody that was going to come out of our conference that was going to be in the Super Bowl, and usually ended up being the Pittsburgh Steelers, you know. But you knew it was going to be a tough game when we played Cincy, but we was never afraid to go play Cincy. And I think we had like this black sheep type mentality where the whole league just kind of hated the Baltimore Ravens. And I don't know if it was because of Ray Lewis or if it was because of Brian Billick, you know, being arrogant as hell, or Ray Lewis just being who he was, you know. And then now you got Ed Reed on that team, and it's that Miami, you know, factor. And then you go get somebody like Terrell Suggs that looked like he could have played at the University of Miami too, you know. So it's just I don't know, man. We had such a dominant defense that we know. I remember having a conversation with Ray when I first got there. He was like, Willie, all y'all got to do is score 21 points. Nobody's going to score 21 on us. Now just think about that. If you know the other team ain't going to score 21, all you got to do is reach the pay dirt three times to win a game. That's not very hard to do. I played on special teams in the offense and averaged about 70 plays, 80 plays a game, you know, so we can go and score on special teams, one touchdown. The offense only need two. You know, Ed Reed was almost guaranteed to take one to the house, so all we need to score is one on offense. You know, so we won a lot of games because our defense was so freaking good. You know, Cincinnati was always held back. I don't even know what truly stopped them, but I just never felt like they had a defense that was so scary that it was going to keep you from scoring. When you went to Pittsburgh, you knew it was going to be a bloodbath.
Yeah.
You know, you knew it was going to be a bloodbath. They weren't afraid of us. We weren't afraid of them. There was a mutual respect that we was going to go hard, and we used to set each other up. I felt like every game, all right, this is the player that's going to get knocked out first. Who want it? Oh, I want it. Let me get him. You know, it was that type of thing. And you never had that mindset going into Cincy. You know, you had that. You went in like, all right, we got to go play fundamental football, play solid, don't turn the ball over, and we're going to score points when we get the opportunity to score points. You know, but I felt like they had two receivers in Chad Johnson and T.J. Housmanzada. That was, I felt like, really elite. When T.J. came in, that made Chad that much better because now everybody couldn't focus on Chad 100%. You know, and you knew you was going to get some comedy from them because Chad was always into something, man. When I say he was always into something, and it was always going to be some paper stuck up on our bathroom stalls, you know, that with something that Chad Johnson had done said, man. So it was funny, man, but it was great times, man. It was really a great time for football for us. And that was back when football was really football, where concussions weren't even a thing, you know. everybody played through a concussion. Everybody got a concussion, and nobody even knew what it was. We just said, oh, we're a little dizzy. We back in the game, and we keep going.
Wild times. And I feel like the transition almost happened like after you exited the league, because then Mike Zimmer was hired but as the Bengals defense coordinator, and then the rivalry between the Bengals and Ravens kind of really evened out throughout the 2010s. Now we're here with this new look Ravens offense for the past few years with Lamar Jackson. It's forced the Bengals defense to evolve completely in order to stop it. And now we're here. This is the third matchup between both of these teams, and you have a third, potentially a third different quarterback starting for the Ravens in this game. And I almost feel a little weird asking this, because obviously Tyler Huntley can't do some of the things that Lamar Jackson can do. But just from your perspective, what are the things that Tyler Huntley can do under his own control to maybe improve off of the four or five starts that he had to finish the season?
Oh, I think around the NFL, Tyler Huntley is probably the closest thing to Lamar Jackson. He's our backup quarterback. I feel like he can go somewhere else and start. I think he's a dynamic, you know, really phenomenal, explosive type QB that can, you know, make some big plays with his legs. I think the way our offense is set up, it's set up for Lamar to shine more than it is for Tyler. But Tyler can do every single thing. To me, you ask me, he can do almost every single thing that Lamar can do. Lamar is like that one in every 10-year athlete. You know, like you only see that guy once every 10 years. The only other person I remember that reminds me of Lamar Jackson is Michael Vick. I haven't seen a Michael Vick before Michael Vick, and I haven't seen one after Michael Vick, but Lamar is the closest thing to Michael Vick. But you can't even call him Michael Vick because he's Lamar Jackson. That's how dynamic he is. Like, he's Lamar Jackson. So the next person that come around, they're going to be compared to Lamar, not to Michael, you know. And Michael Vick, his career got cut short. So when you bring a guy like Tyler Huntley in off the bench, you don't have to change your offense at all. But one thing that I think that Tyler does really, really well is get the ball out of his hand, you know, fairly quick. You know, he does a better job, to me, than Lamar at getting the ball to the short routes, like right now on a consistent basis. And I think once you do that enough, you know, corners start to cheat up. They get tired of coming up to make that tackle, and then you can start hitting them over their head with some deeper stuff later on in the game. He just has to stay consistent with that and not get greedy throughout the game. And I think he could pull off pretty much any win that he wants to pull off. He's a dynamic guy. It's nothing like having a quarterback on the field that makes you feel like you can win every game. That's what Lamar does. Lamar puts you in a situation where you feel like you can win every game. The reason why the Cincinnati Bengals are as good as they are, because they got Joe Burrow. And when they go into those games, they know they can win every game because of Joe Burrow. He's going to keep them in the game. He's going to keep them in a situation where they get close to it at the end. He could pull it off. He could pull a Tom Brady, you know, and that's what Lamar brings to the Ravens. So without him being out there, you lose that element, you know. You lose that element. When I was in Baltimore, those 2-3 years when we had Kyle Bowler, he was our starter. He was the best quarterback on the team. We went into every game feeling like, shit, I don't know about this. You know, but then you get somebody like Steve McNair come in, right? And then the whole complexion of the team and the way that we think and everything changes. You're like, oh my God, we could probably win every game. Every game. And every game you fight to win. The Ravens they started the season off really well, and then they lost probably four games this year that they shouldn't have lost, and it was due to defensive situations, you know miscommunications, new D coordinator this year with Mike McDonald, and just trying to get, you know, settled down and just trying to get everybody healthy and back on the field, you know, bad clock management or mismanaging calls or mismanaging plays or going for it on fourth when they should have, you know, it was dumb stuff early on that cost them the game. And I really felt like it was due to coaching, not, you know, quarterback play or not, you know, player play. I just felt like coaching had to be better for the Ravens to get better. And I felt like the coaching have started to evolve and they've came better. They've came around, and defense has actually been playing outstanding the last 6 or 7 weeks. And I love to continue to see that. If the Ravens are going to have a chance to win this game, they're going to have to shut down, you know, the receivers in Cincy, and they're going to have to shut down Joe Burrow, you know, and they're going to have to let Mixon know, like, hey, we got some linebackers that are going to come hit you right now, you know. So if you're going to win this game, that's what it's going to have to be. It's going to have to be 100% effort on all three phases of the game: offense, defense, special teams. We got to control the field possession battle on special teams, and then on defense, we can't let Ja'Marr Chase and company just go, you know, bananas on us. And we got to really contain Joe Burrow. We got to really frustrate him and put some of those dynamic blitzes we used to run back in the day, those fire zones, and really confuse him to make him, you know, second guess his throws, hold on to the ball, split second longer, just so our D lineman can get to him, you know. I guess y'all didn't ask me all this. Y'all was asking me about Tyler Huntley, so I'm sorry, but
no, I love it. Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Tyler, I think I really do believe that Tyler got a chance to come into this game and kind of shock some people. You know, if the defense plays like they've been playing and Tyler come in and he's really playing at a high level like he can, he could really surprise you.
Well, I got kind of a two-pronged question with that then. And by the way, we're talking with Daniel Wilcox, former Ravens tight end and current Believe in Ravens podcast host. My two-pronged question here, I mean, I think I believe you in a lot of ways when you say Tyler Huntley can do a lot of the things that Lamar Jackson can. Yeah. But the proof in terms of what the Ravens have been doing in Lamar Jackson's offense is they're averaging about 16, 17 points scored per game, right? And so it's been on the defense to do kind of miraculous things almost to get them some of the wins, keep them afloat, and get them into the playoffs here. So I guess a couple of questions here. I mean, what's going to be the key for Tyler Huntley to maybe do some of those things that Lamar can do, but also have them score more points than they have been scoring? And then if you're the Bengals offense and you're trying to attack the Ravens defense, like, you know, they can shut a player down, they can shut a couple of players down, but where's right. the one area you kind of see is kind of the chip in the armor, so to speak, where the Bengals can kind of say, hey, maybe try that, exploit that area right there? Because they seem to be good at a lot of different things on defense.
So for me, Tyler Huntley, he has to play lights out. He has to be able to read the coverages on point and understand that when they're in man coverage, that's the best time to scramble. He has to take the scramble when he gets it so he can put that added pressure on the defense. And he has to throw the ball into tight windows without turning the ball over. It's going to be tight coverage. It's going to be hard. We don't have the top tier receivers in the country right now. You know, we got a bunch of guys that people are trying to figure out who they are. And hell, even the receivers are trying to figure out who they are half the time. You know, so we got a bunch of guys that definitely need to continue to develop and get better as the year goes on. And he's going to need help from those guys. He's going to need help from those second tier, third tier guys, those, you know, those second level, third level guys. The receivers are going to have to get involved. It can't be 100% all Mark Andrews. I think we have such a dynamic backfield that should allow them to be able to take some pressure off them as well. I think if I was Baltimore and I'm coaching, I'm the offense coordinator right now, what I would do is I would probably go a lot of two tight end sets, three tight end sets, you know, put one receiver on the field that I feel like could go 100 miles per hour every single play and rotate my receivers in and out, one or two receivers. And then I would run the ball down Cincinnati's throat until they force me to have to throw the ball over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. In the process of doing that, I'm slowing down the clock. I'm keeping Joe Burrow off the field. I'm keeping all your receivers, all your big time playmakers off the field. I know my defense is playing solid. I would almost go to a wing T offense, almost basically what I'm saying, where you just slow the game way freaking down. And it's going to be boring as hell for everybody at home. But as long as we continue to get first down, you got really good running backs and J.K. Dobbins. You know, Kenyon Drake has been playing, you know, balls out all year long. Mm-hmm. And then you got big boy Ricard back there. Nobody wants to hit a 300-pound D lineman fullback, you know, every play. You put him back there, let him pound on you, and then you put your big tight ends in there and let them, you know, block up the edge and force those little DBs to come up and make tackles against your talented guys. I think you change the game. And then you do a bunch of play action off of it, too, with the tight ends and stuff like that with Mark Andrews and Isaiah Likely and – you know, all those guys, man, and you kind of really put Cincinnati in a bind. You make them have to change their defense. You know, you got to bring some, take some of their best fast guys off the field and put some bigger guys out there just to compete. You know, otherwise you're running down their throat every play. But I think you have to do some stuff like that. Put an extra lineman in, go tackle over, you know, that type of stuff. And that will really kind of solidify this game for you. So if I was an OC, that's what I would do this week and still be able to run some of my RPO stuff and dump it to my tight end dumps, screen passes, you know, all that type of stuff to kind of mix it up a little bit, you know. So, but Tyler, he can't turn the ball over this week. If he turn it over this week, you can hang it up. You can freaking hang it up. They will blow the lights off the freaking Baltimore Ravens if we turn the ball over. It's going to be like the Georgia TCU game. You know, Cincinnati's going to be Georgia. The Ravens are going to be TCU. You know, so we got to definitely, I think, slow the game down, keep their offense off the field, and put us in a situation where we're going to win. Our defense is playing so good right now if they can play even better this week, which they should, you know, it's a playoff game. You know, the atmosphere is just different. It feels different on a playoff game. Like, it gives you a difference, like a different kind of energy when you get ready to go into a playoff situation. And it's so electric. You know, it's such an electric atmosphere, and it just makes you want to play. And then this is free money. It's free money. It's not money that you count on your taxes. You know, so when you get this check, it's like, all right, where y'all want to go? You tell your wife, hey, babe, you know the trip you always wanted to go on? This first round, going to play for it. You know? So, I mean, it's one of those things, man, where you you feel different going into this game, and the atmosphere is so electric and it's so fun. It's going to be on primetime television. And you wouldn't want to go against a better component than the Cincinnati Bengals right now. You know, you won one game, they won one game. All right, this is the tiebreaker. All right, let's set it off.
So I guess this is the time to say, are they going to get that tiebreaker? How do you see this game going out? Were you surprised, I guess, by how well the Ravens were running the ball? Or is that more of your expectation? Do you see that continuing? How do you see this game going out, man?
I feel like we're going to get our butts whooped. That's how I feel. I haven't said it all year. I'm 100% Raven all year long, every game. If we don't go into this game, and I mean, this has got to be one of those games. It's like I used to play private school ball when I was in high school, right? And we was always the more talented team. I mean, we had more athletes than they had. We had better, bigger athletes than they had. But it was like you would go over there and play them, and they never made a mistake. We have to be that private school this week. We cannot make a mistake on offense, on defense. It can't be no busted coverage, no miscommunications. Special teams, we got to earn and win that field position battle, pin them down in the red zone on the punts and the kicks, you know, and then don't let them go 99 yards. We got to find ways to, you know, get turnovers and picks on defense, and those picks got to turn into pick six. We got to cause fumbles and script the ball every opportunity we got so that we can keep their offense off the field. We really got to disrupt their timing on our defense, and we got to be aggressive. We got to be extremely aggressive, and we got to play good on the back end. We got two of the best corners in the league, you know, let them earn their checks this week, you know, put them on the corner man to man, and everybody else, let's go get after these guys, man, 100%. So I don't see this one turning out good. If we had Lamar, I'd be like, all right, y'all about to get your ass whooped, Cincy. But we don't have Lamar, man. So when we don't have he's that X factor that makes people be scared right now for Baltimore. I feel like our defense is good, but they're not terrifying people like they used to. Like back in the day, you could hit somebody so hard, you knock their helmet off, and it's a wrap. You remember the game when Chad came across the middle and Ray Lewis hit him on that slant route?
Smacked him, knocked
his helmet over to the sideline? You know, that type of stuff you can't even do no more. You know, so it's like, who's really afraid to go in inside or go across the middle anymore, because you can't even hit people the same way you used to be able to hit them. You know, but you wouldn't come across that middle at all with Ray Lewis and company and Bart Scott in the middle, you know. So I don't know. I feel like our offense is the scariest part of our team. And without your star guy, you know, I don't think anybody's afraid of the Ravens offense without Lamar out there.
Talking with Daniel Wilcox, former Ravens tight end and current Believe in Ravens podcast host. One more question before we get out of here and hear about your show, where to find it, all that good stuff. Mm-hmm. You won a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yes, you sir. Went. You mentioned the conference championship game that you went to under Harbaugh in his first year with the Baltimore Ravens. Just can you just kind of walk us through just how arduous and how difficult it is to not only number one get to and win a Super Bowl, but number two, whether it's with the same team, a different team, how hard it is to get back to the Super Bowl, because you have experienced both.
I just from
us dopes that sit on the couch and think we know everything, to a guy like yourself that is bright and has been there, done that, I would love to get that perspective in terms of how difficult that truly is.
That's a great question, Ant. So I can give you one story right now real quick. My rookie year in the league, I was with the New York Jets. Herman Edwards was a rookie year head coach. I had three rookie head coaches throughout my career, my nine-year career. So I had Herman Edwards in New York. I had John Gruden, who was his first year head coach at Tampa. Then I had John Harbaugh, his rookie year in Baltimore. When I was sitting down, after I made the team as a rookie in New York, I remember Herm Edwards sitting down in the team meeting room, and he stood up in front of the whole team, and he had put up on the board, and he was talking about making the playoffs and our projections, what we want to do this year as a New York Jet franchise, as a team. And I remember Herm saying, "Hey guys, I want to do something real quick. If you ever been to the playoffs, stand up." And it was about, I'd say 75 guys. I'd say maybe 20 guys stood up, went to the playoffs. He was like, "All right, you ever been to the second round of the playoffs? Stand up." Say about 10 guys stood up. Then he said, "You ever been to, anybody ever been to the Super Bowl?" Nobody stood up. And then he was like, "Anybody ever win the Super Bowl?" Nobody stood up. Mind you, I got Vinny Testaverde on the team. We played 20 years. This was year 18 for Vinny, you know? And it's like, dang, like nobody, the whole team, nobody ever been to a Super Bowl? Ever, you know, I went in my second year because I ended up getting picked up by Tampa. And we went to the Super Bowl and won it, you know? And you was playing with such a dynamic cast of guys, you don't realize, like, how amazing this is. Like, Booger McFarlane, you know, Warren Sapp, Greg Spires, Simeon Rice, Derek Brooks, Shelton Quarles, Nate Webster, Al Singleton, freaking Rondé Barber, John Lynch, Brian Kelly. You know, like, it was such a dynamic cast. Dexter Jackson was a Super Bowl MVP, our starting safety that went to Cincy. You know, he went and played for Cincy.
Webster.
Nate Webster came over too. And so when you started to think about, like, how dynamic of a situation that was, it was like, wow, you know. Then you get to, you know, Baltimore, and they had won one the year, my senior year of college. They won in 2000, you know. So the Ravens had already won. So a lot of those players on that team had already been to the playoffs and already been to a Super Bowl, you know, and won one at that, you know. So then we fought the 5 years I was there. We really thought we had a really good chance the year that Steve McNair came in, and we thought we was going to make it. And we ended up having the first round bye because we played so well. And then we came back kind of stale after the first round bye, didn't score a touchdown at all. We end up losing to Peyton Manning and company. You know, I think we lost in Baltimore, and it was only field goals. They only kick field goals. We only kick field goals. Matt Stover never misses. He missed one or two that game, and we lose by 6 points. You know, it was crazy. And then my last season, you know, I'm like, man, this is finally my opportunity. You know, we got Joe Flacco in. Flacco was not supposed to be our starting quarterback that year. You know, Steve McNair was our starter. Behind Steve McNair, Kyle Bowler was our number two. Behind Kyle Bowler, the Heisman Trophy winner, Troy Smith, was our number three. And then we had just drafted Joe Flacco. He was literally number four on the depth chart that year. Steve McNair came. He didn't like the way Harbaugh was treating us. And he was like, bro, he was coming off a shoulder surgery, another shoulder surgeon. He was like, "I already know how this is about to go. I'm done." He hangs it up in training camp and says he retired. All right. Kyle Bowler tears his shoulder up in training camp, has to have surgery. Troy Smith, freak incident, caught a blood clot in his lung, lost about 100 pounds. He was literally, by the time the season started, he lost like 100 pounds in like 2 weeks.
Oh, my God.
I'd never seen anything like it before. Like, he couldn't even throw the ball from here to the camera where I'm at right now. That's how weak he was. We thought he was going to die. Nobody knew what was going on. Like, we didn't know about a blood clot being in the lung, none of that. It never heard anything like that before. He didn't get back to full strength until like maybe week 9, week 10 of the season. Like, that's how long it took him to recover. And then Joe Flacco ended up having to start his first game as a rookie quarterback in the NFL. And I remember Cam Cameron said, "Hey, I need you guys to step up. You know, we're going to need you guys to be a great supporting cast for Joe." I mean, he had me, he had Todd Heap, he had Willis McGahee, he had Lorenzo Neal, he had Lamont Jordan. I mean, not Lamont Jordan, freaking 33. What's my boy 33 name?
LaRon McClain.
LaRon McClain. Yeah, McClain had just came in. We had just got Ray Rice. You know, we were stacked. You know, like, as an offensive front, we looked really, really, really freaking good. And then we still had Derek Mason, Mark Clayton, that receiver. You know, we had a really good supporting cast. Demetrius Williams, I think we had brought in Harper. I think he went to Virginia Tech at the time. You know, he was a big receiver out of Virginia Tech. We felt like we were stacked. We was in a really good situation. And Cam Cameron said, "We're going to take our offense down 10 to 15 plays per game, and we're going to all work around with Joe's strength start, get the balls out of his hands quick. But we're going to rely heavily on the run game." That's why LaRon McClain, Willis McGahee had such dynamic years that year. They was freaking lighting up every freaking team we played against, those two guys. And we had a stellar offensive line. You know, Jonathan Ogden had just retired, but we still had Zeus, Orlando Brown. His son is now playing, you know, in the league right now. We had Marshall Yonder. you know, who retired a couple of years back, who's end up being a, probably going to be a Hall of Famer, you know, guard. Yep. You know, I mean, we were stacked. We were really stacked. We really were. We had a really good team and thought this was going to be our year. And we almost won every game. It was crazy. We almost won every game. We make it to the AFC Championship. And we really thought we was going to win that game, man. And, you know, and Pittsburgh found a way. You know, they did what they do best. They found a way. Just like we did, we always found a way. They found a way one more time than we did that game and ended up pulling it out. And they won the Super Bowl that year. So it's extremely – this whole football thing goes by so fast. And your mom tell you when you're a kid, anything that you're having fun doing is going to go – time flies when you're having fun, right? Football is such a dynamic sport, and it takes up so much of your time, and it forces you to put so much of yourself into it that you don't even realize, like, the moments that you're in, like those little moments when something spectacular happens, like when Ed Reed picks one off, you know, 8 yards deep in the end zone and returns it 108 yards, and you're sitting on the sideline like, oh my God, did he just do that? And you really just so enamored with the play. Right. You're not even thinking about, like, how special part of history this really is. You know, like, this is an amazing experience. Like, us losing that game with Santonio Holmes, with the toe tap and the fingertip catch in the back corner of the end zone from Roethlisberger, you know, it trips you out. You know, when freaking Chad Johnson goes in and try to blindside Ray Lewis, and we all on the sideline laughing, Barry, did you just see Chad try to blindside Ray and get his block knocked off? You know what I'm saying? And he comes back over there to your smile line with gold teeth on the top and the bottom, and he like he's smiling at you. You know what I'm saying? Like it's just, man, it's too funny, man. Like, you just look back on some of these moments, it's so nostalgic and such an amazing, you know, time to be able to play the game of football, that the game we love so much, man. And I was one of the few blessed to get a chance to go to that Super Bowl in year two. Cause if I didn't go then, the rest of my season, I never had a shot. You know, so the guys that get an opportunity to go, like Joe Burrow and company that went last year, that's a tremendous feeling. To think that he can go in year one, he about to pray to God he get a second chance, because he didn't get a chance to pull that win out. And it's just, I mean, what do you say, man? You know, what do you say? You're blessed to go year one. And if you don't go back again, it's going to haunt you the rest of your life.
Yep. Well, find a way is what you said there in the Bengals. Find a way. Got to find a way, and the Ravens got to find a way without Lamar Jackson this week. Daniel, this has been awesome, man. I hope you're still going to be with Believe next year, and if so, we would love to have you back for more rematches and all kinds of stuff, man. This has been awesome. Tell us about your show. I'm going to pull up the screen. I'm going to share the link to it. Tell us about your show, your co-host, when you go live, where people can find it, all that good stuff.
Well, you can find our show, Believe in the Ravens podcast. You can find it on any freaking podcast app out or whatever it may be. It's everywhere. You know, it's Spotify, Apple Music. It's on everything. Wherever you go, you can find it. It's Believe in the Ravens podcast. It's myself, Daniel Wilcox, and Bo Smoker. He's a reporter in Baltimore, so he has the kind of the inside scoop. You know, he's in the locker room every day. He's at the practice field every day, you know, at the games. And you know, Bo does a phenomenal job, you know, hosting the show. And I mean, it's fun. You know, it's kind of the whole show is kind of based off what we just did just now, you know, where Bo asks a bunch of questions and we talk football. He kind of gives you the rundown of stats and who's doing this, who's doing what. And then he asked me some real questions about a player's perspective in those situations. And I get a chance to share those perspectives. And a lot of time it comes out kind of cool. Sometimes it comes out aight, you know, but then when every now and then you get a gem or you get a little bit of a nugget that makes you smile, man. It makes you realize, like, dang, that's got to be pretty dope. And one of the things that John Harbaugh used to always say that used to trip me out was, who's got it better than us? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And it's funny, man. Like, you.
That's him and his bro, right? They both do that, right?
Got it from his dad. You know, his dad used to coach at Western Kentucky. I think I beat his dad in the playoffs when I was at App State.
Nice. You know,
yeah, so we won that game. We went up to Western Kentucky. But, I mean, it's one of those things, man, where there's moments in the NFL you feel like nobody got it better than you. And then there's moments you feel like, man, y'all can have this crap. You know what I'm saying? I'm out. You know, because it's like a double-edged sword, man. Like, it has its amazing moments, and then it has its moments where you actually contemplate and, like, giving it all up. Like, I don't know if it's worth it, you know. So the things that it does for your family are the things that make you feel like, all right, I'm in the greatest – organization in the world. And then those moments when you have that shield on and you go somewhere and the way people treat you with that shield on makes you feel like you're like you're some kind of magical creature or something, you know. And when you lose that shield, it doesn't make you feel that great once you leave that thing, and you don't get that same love, that same respect, that same affection that you get when you play, though. So, but it's awesome, man. I appreciate you guys having me on, John, Anthony, both of you guys, man. Good luck this week, man. And you know, if it's meant for Cincy to get it, you know, I'm sending love and blessings, and I want to keep it in the AFC. So if y'all beat us out, then I'm praying for y'all to win the whole thing. Let's go.
I appreciate it, man. This has been seriously awesome. I've like I said before we took the air, respected your career for a long time. Definitely pleasure having you on. And next year, man, regardless of the outcome here next year, I hope we can have you on and do this thing again.
Hey, I got all this podcast equipment. Don't let me waste it. Let's go.
I won't. Thanks, Daniel. Take care, man.
No doubt. Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
All right.
Thanks, Daniel.
That's Daniel Wilcox, former Ravens tight end, Believe in Ravens podcast host. What a guy, dude. That was awesome. Asked for 20 minutes and we got like double that. I hope we didn't screw up his schedule there. But John, that was killer, dude.
Yeah, those Believe dudes, they're great storytellers. Maybe that's why they're employed there. I don't know.
Yeah, like you, great storytellers. We're going to be here a little while longer. You're going to answer a couple of listener questions to tack on a little bit of a bonus on this episode here. Man, that was, I don't know, dude. People know I'm kind of a history guy. Especially football history, AFC North history. I don't know. You hear all those names. I'm like, LaRon McClain. When have I used the name LaRon McClain ever on this show? It's just, you get nostalgic about that kind of stuff, or at least I do.
Yeah, it was a blast in the past. I forgot who that even was. So, wow.
you see a couple of questions here you want to get to on any of the live chats or anything?
No, and I'm very disappointed. No one has a freaking question about the AFC wildcard playoffs. Like, what's going on here? You guys just know everything, huh? You don't need us. You don't need us to answer any questions. Nothing. Nothing. Not a single question.
I see this one though. Do we even want to go this down this route again?
Oh my
God. From Joe.
I don't know, man. What are we, fortune tellers? I don't know if there's gonna be personal fouls. Both teams are gonna be mad. This is a division rival, maybe.
Maybe it depends on if it gets crazy chippy. And there's gonna be some blatant stuff. But I mean, they let a lot of stuff go last week. There was some stuff that it could have been ticky tack calls or any of that. But that could have been something where you go, well, you know, one of those could have been called. A couple of those could have been called, I guess. But I don't anticipate necessarily a lot of personal fouls this week. I expect this to be an emotionally energized game. I will put it that way.
Yeah, hopefully not any in the last 2 minutes after a fumble. You know, maybe you know, cool the tempers a little bit if the Bengals are on defense a little bit.
Did we get a text? So we got one from 901. I think this is from our boy Dan. It seems we have abandoned the running game. Are you worried about the lack of rushing yards going into the postseason, John?
A little bit. They couldn't run the ball against Baltimore, so there's no real reason to just run it up the middle for a yard or two every single time if it's not working. Baltimore was really good in setting the edge this past weekend and just clogging up the middle, which is the opposite of what the Bengals did when the Ravens were on the field on offense. It was a very shocking part of the game how they couldn't run the ball against the Baltimore defense that's not necessarily the strength nowadays. Like, when they finished the season as a not so good team defending the run and they couldn't generate any movement, that's going to be an interesting dynamic to watch for now that you have a new right guard in there with the Keeman energy. You have athleticism on that side of the offensive line, but can they get pushed? Can they generate movement against the likes of Jason Pierre-Paul and Calais Campbell and guys like that? So if it's not working, there's no reason to just run it up for a yard or two a game when you have Joe Burrow quarterback.
I've kind of been the guy that always preaches offensive balance and all that kind of stuff. I don't know that you're going to need to, you know, be a ground and pound and Joe Mixon gets 25 to 30 carries and needs to crack 100 yards, that sort of thing. You're just going to need to keep this defense honest in some form or fashion. You're going to need to keep them honest, because if they just stop the run and you pass the ball, you know, you're forced to pass the ball 45 plus times. I like the ball in Joe Burrow's hands, obviously, but like you said, John, with two new starters on this offensive line, or newish starters on this offensive line, and this defense being what it is, that becomes a little bit more precarious of a situation than I would I would prefer. So again, I don't think I think it just it's not, you know, a high volume of carries, a high volume of yards. It's just knowing when to run and being effective with the runs that are called, and whether that's Mixon, whether that's P Ryan, I don't know, but that's, you're just going to need to get, you know, 3-4 yards instead of one. You know, you're going to need to get, you know, if you do run it on first down, getting that 6-yard carry on first down to set you up for a second and four and give you options, a third and two, that sort of thing, instead of third and sevens, third and eights. I guess it's cliche to say all of that, but it's just really, it's not about the volume for me. It's just about the quality over quantity, I guess, when it comes to the Bengals being able to run. And I am a little bit worried about it.
No, that's well said. And I feel like it ties into this question we got from Matthew. He's asking, what do you guys think Brian Callahan and Zach Taylor are hiding up their sleeves, given that they weren't really showing their hand in the second half? I feel like a lot of that is actually the running game and the fact that we didn't see that much of it against Baltimore. I feel like there's some concepts that they're going to roll out there just because you have new offensive linemen on the right side of your line. Maybe that changes what you can and can't do in terms of running more zone and stuff like that. So I think we're going to see more of a balanced attack because I think the running game is going to be a little bit better. But again, it remains to be seen. Like I didn't really do that much of a deep dive in the concepts they did and didn't use it. It did seem a lot similar to the Week 5 game when they were still really finding themselves on offense. And maybe we'll see some more explosive passing options down the field. But again, like I feel like the new right guard definitely changes things, and whether or not Max Sharping can generate movement is going to be an interesting thing to watch.
I don't really know exactly like, hey, this is going to be the game plan, but, and I know we talk about how they kind of went a little more vanilla on offense and all that kind of stuff, kind of late in the game last week, but John, like even when they did and they were running kind of go routes and this, I mean, there were still shots there.
Yeah.
And points on the board there with what they were running last week. So while I think they may get a little more elaborate and do different things and obviously try and get more out of the run game, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see some similar stuff called because they, I mean, they had big plays available to them, and some of which were in the second half that would have scored touchdowns. So I would not be surprised if we see at least a few of those similarities, even though the game plan was quote unquote vanilla last week. We got a call on the line. I think it's from our buddy, Terrell, hanging on the line. Terrell, what's going on, bud?
Hey, guys.
We're doing all right, man. How are you? Wild card weekend.
No, man. I'm actually, but I had to play, let the guys play. Now, that was a really good interview.
Did you hear him, John? I'm having a little trouble hearing him.
No, it sounds like he's in the tunnel.
Hold on. I was just saying that's a really good energy by Doug Wilcox.
Really good energy by who? We'll get him back in a sec. Yeah.
I was saying that was a really good interview by Daniel Wilcox.
Oh, thanks, man. Appreciate that.
And I was gonna say, yeah, man. I just gotta say though, they gotta run the ball, and try to find a way to run the ball, stay focused, and let Burrow be Burrow, and just keep everybody healthy. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I don't know if you heard me. I was saying that was a really good interview by David Wilcox. That's what I was trying to say.
Oh, appreciate that. Appreciate that, man. Appreciate you, Terrell. And, hey, are you going to the game this weekend?
John, I was trying to tell John, man, when Jason Kelce retired, man, we need him as the head coach. Like, for real. I'm feeling his rap cover song, too. And y'all have a good day at Who Day.
All right. Take care, man. Thank you. John, did it surprise you that Daniel Wilcox said that he thought that the Ravens were going to get smoked? I mean, usually the people come in here that cover the other team, and us too. We kind of put on our Homer hats a little bit. We try and be as objective as possible. But like, you know, since Terrell referenced Wilcox, since we just talked to him, I was like surprised as hell that he said that he thought that the Bengals were going to kind of walk through this one a little bit. I I don't necessarily agree with that assessment, regardless of who's playing quarterback, but just because I think the Ravens are tough, and it's tough to beat a team, you know, another time this year, next extra time.
He was, you know, singing the praises of Tyler Huntley all throughout the show. And it's like, okay, yeah. Like, he's going to be competent. The Ravens are going to have a chance. And nope. Bengals just mollywalk them. What did Terrell say about Jason Kelce? I couldn't hear him.
I think he said something about him maybe becoming a coach or something.
That'd be nice.
Yeah. So let's see, any others that we want to get to here? I know we've gone long because of the interview and stuff. That was awesome though. I haven't looked at the other platforms. Did you see any others?
I did not see any in the CJ thread. We just had another from Matthew here on YouTube. He's asking about a potential big Dax Hill game coming up
with
Titans to cover. I don't think there is a big Dax Hill game until he takes over for Jesse Bates next season. Spoiler alert. We saw in this past game, he had a handful of snaps in the slot, and he was lined up against the rookie tight end Charlie Kohler, and Kohler caught a ball on him, and it was really perfect coverage from Dax, but that's just the reality when you have a 6'5", 250-pound human against a 6', 200-pound human. No matter how perfect the coverage is, if you don't get a hand on the ball, like, the guy just has a size advantage, and that's how it's going to work if the pass is somewhat accurate. So Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, Charlie Kohler, these guys are big and they're fast, and it's really hard for someone significantly smaller like Dax Hill to man up on him.
I'm going to steal something that I saw on Twitter and use it for our benefit, I guess, on this show. And that was someone just basically kind of tweeted out, I'm going to be so sad when Bates, Pratt, and Perine are all gone after this season in free agency. Do you agree with that? Do you think all three are gone, or do you... I mean, I think we're seeing, unfortunately, the writing on the wall with Bates, and that's especially unfortunate because of, you know, the game he just had literally last week. But, I mean, do you see all of those players being gone? I know they've got a lot of people to kind of re-sign and other contracts to hopefully extend.
Yeah, I forgot that Perine was a free agent. I would imagine it wouldn't take that much to bring him back so long as he wants to be back. And that's another thing here. Like, you're going on two... potentially deep playoff runs back to back. There's the factor of, hey, does anyone want to take a slight discount to just kind of keep the band back together or just keep things going, much like what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have done. But as far as Bates and Pratt go, I feel like that's the safest to assume are going to leave, just because Pratt has kind of outpriced himself for how great of a year it's been. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. He's earned what he's going to get on the open market. But I feel like linebacker is never really a position where the Bengals really, you know, drop the bucket for, unless it's for maybe Logan Wilson, who takes a little bit less compared to Pratt because of just the difference in how their seasons have kind of gone. So I would say Bates and Pratt are pretty much out the door at this point, but I wouldn't be surprised to see Perine get back.
Yeah, because you're looking at now, right? I think you mentioned it. You're looking at the extensions for some of the guys on offense too. So, you know, that's going to be all part of the equation. I find it hard to believe that all three would walk, but I don't know. We'll see. At any rate, any others we want to get to, but we're coming up on a long hour here. It flew by talking with Daniel Wilcox. I just wanted to sneak in a couple of questions here. Any others you see that we want to get to before we bounce out, my friend?
No, just some John Harbaugh hate earlier when Daniel was talking.
I didn't want to put that up. I didn't want to put that up.
We got to be more respectful when former players and guests are talking about people that they care about. Like, I understand that this is fandom, but come on, guys. We want guests to come back. We want them to feel welcomed. And, yeah, maybe tone down some of the comments a little bit. Unless there are questions for us.
Or wait till they exit. You know, you can save that for when they exit, but that's okay. I understand. I understand the emotions, and I understand the emotions of the Harbaugh brothers in general when it comes to Ohioans and Bengals fans, etc. I get it, but hey, he has a long track record of success. The Ravens have a long track record of success, even though they are a younger franchise in the NFL, and the Bengals gotta derail their season coming up here on Sunday night in the wild card round. So that's going to do it. We had an awesome time chatting with former Ravens tight end and believe podcast host Daniel Wilcox, as well as answering a couple of your questions. We snuck a couple of those in. John, we did a lot this week, my friend. I asked a lot of you, and I appreciate it. Appreciate your insights. Appreciate all your time. And we're going to get back to it, I guess, this Sunday. Enjoy yourself. You're going to the game. Yeah, enjoy yourself, man.
I'm rewarding myself by being there. And the Bengals have not lost in a long time in my presence. I'm not counting the Buffalo Bills canceled game, even though those technically lost in the standings. It didn't finish. Bengals looked pretty good in that one, so I'm feeling pretty good.
I hope so. I hope the streak continues for all of us. Thank you all for tuning in, submitting
your
questions.
Where's Wood? I need to knock on it. Hold on.
Yeah, exactly. there you go. Submitting your questions and downloading all the stuff this week. Hopefully you've enjoyed it. We've had an interview with Kenny Anderson. We had the guys from 410 Sports Talk on again. That was an entertaining chat for sure. Go check out their channel too. John and I made an appearance on that last night. And then of course we had Daniel Wilcox today and some listener questions, as well as Bengal Jim bringing you Andrew Whitworth on his show, Matt Minnick bringing the coach speak, chalk talk analysis, all of that. Hopefully you have enjoyed it on the Cincy Jungle podcast channel. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, all of the major ones. And if you like what we do video wise, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel beneath John there. And you see our little show icon in the bottom corner there. Go click that, subscribe, click the bell to be notified when we go live, when new content is available, and go give a thumbs up over to the Cincy Jungle Facebook page as well, where all of our podcasts, when we do live streams, get streamed there as well. John, have a good weekend, my friend. We'll talk soon.
We'll talk soon, man.